to another episode of Come With Your Day. We have with us, joining with us, one of our good friends who we will introduce in just a second. But in the meantime, we wanted to introduce what the topic of this show is about today. We cover things all the time. We cover kink, we cover BDSM, we cover relationships and communication, mm-hmm. and all sorts of topics. But one of the most largely asked questions we get from our audience, almost more than anything we get.
Literally more than anything.
Really? What do I do if we want to open a relationship? And so, in order to give people a better view of this mm-hmm. landscape, what that's like, we've brought on our friend Fox Eros. Fox, how you doing?
Hi, I'm Fox Eros. Hi, friends. We're like Sexual Health Alliance friends, aren't we?
We are.
Yes, we are.
That's what I started in Sexual Health Alliance. Carrie's now with Sexual Health.
Yeah, it's our own little like sex positive tribe. I love that. I love that y'all are doing your podcast and you're still doing it. So amazing. There you are.
Man.
I'm not mad.
So he's going to go off really fast and try and see what is going on with our Wi-Fi.
Yeah, no problem. Maybe restarting it. I know it's so funny because I'm like this and I'm like hoping you know that. Yeah, okay. You know what I mean. Okay.
Totally fine. So how long have you been with SHA?
Sorry, say it again.
How long have you been with Shaw?
Well, gosh, I graduated from the sex therapy program, I think mm-hmm. last year, but I did it at the same time as I was in my master's program to be a marriage family therapist. I'm an associate marriage family therapist now. I'm supposed to say that I'm an associate, but yeah, I did it at the same time. It was stressful because I was doing so much, but I would do it again. It was so informative. I needed, especially in sex issues and psychotherapy, it's so detailed and nuanced and complex that I felt like I really needed like a lot of information. So now mm-hmm. when I'm with my clients, I have so many, if I don't know the answer, I have the resources. Right. And then if I do know the answers, I feel really competent and confident. What do you use your Sexual Health Alliance for?
So I'm in the coaching program.
Oh,
Dr. Lay had been working very closely with me and it was actually them who recommended me actually going more into the coaching program. After meeting with them a few times, they read me like a book and they were like, you don't necessarily seem like someone who wants to like dive into like the emotions, but you're probably better suited at like being giving direct. Really good advice. Yeah.
Yes. Being direct,
giving good advice.
I love that.
And so it just kind of turned into this like beautiful concept that like Casey was going to go into the counseling. I was going to go into the coaching and then we're going to be able to come together and really help people. And that was been our goal. That's been our goal this entire time.
I'm back.
Well,
that
welcome back.
Like Batman. He was like,
I'm back.
I don't know. Are we using all this? Are you going to like,
I mean, we might, I think we can find little bits of it. It's cute.
Yeah. Because y'all have such, let's use this. Y'all have the most pleasant, like loving voices, very sexy podcast voices.
Oh, thank you very much.
Yeah. That's
good to
like,
hear.
90% of why I listen to a podcast is if I resonate and align with the voice, if it's like slightly arousing and very informative, and y'all have Perfect. That. Good awesome. Job.
I'm arousing and informative, baby.
Hello.
She did say we.
Oh, okay. You know, we're probably going to use all of this actually.
That's our new tagline. That's our new tagline. We are arousing and informative.
Yes. That's your tagline. And you have to use the Batman part.
Yeah, yes. There you go.
But I am not Robin, damn it. I'm like Poison Ivy.
No. You're your own superhero. You're not a psychic.
I'm my own entity.
You can be Catwoman.
No, that? I'm Poison Ivy.
Okay, fine.
Have you seen my houseplants? All right. All right.
Yeah.
All right. So back on topic, now that we've sorted through our technical difficulties.
Okay.
Fox, we are super excited to have you on the show to talk all about polyamory. Yeah. If we understand correctly, you are an inclusive and affirmative. Oh my God, I'm just dropping balls.
No, you're good.
Inclusive and affirmative therapist for individuals in intimate relationships, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. So tell us a little bit about yourself and what it is you do.
Okay. First of all, I always like to acknowledge the land that I'm on of the Chumash Native First Peoples. And so, yes, I'm an associate marriage therapist, associate marriage and family therapist. And that means that I just work with people to kind of navigate like trauma and emotions, where they're stuck, life stress. And it's kind of been my calling to work with people in polyamorous relationships and also sex issues. Cause you know, we're all from the Sexual Health Alliance. That's right. Where we all studied. Mm-hmm. So I'm also certified in that. And I worked with Dr. Eli Sheff. I don't know if you know her. I love her, but she's done research in polyamory for like decades. And she's written a book. So I studied with her, and now I call myself the polyamory therapist. I'm on all the social medias as that. And it's like my life calling. I don't know what it is, but it's like, it just turns me on spiritually and in every other way to work with this population and then to talk about it. I think it's because it's radicalizing love. And it's going back to how we used to be. Like indigenous people were already doing this. Like monogamy is not the original or the new. Hello. Right. Like we are returning back to a new way of relating and loving. And
I love that whenever we look back into a lot of the history, it's one of the things I do the most is reading a lot of research. And we look at books like what's like Sex, a World History. And we talk about how relationships used to look way back when. And it was never this one thing of monogamy is the only way. And you're in this box and that's all you get. There's been a relationship styles have shifted and changed and flowed over centuries within humanity.
I love that.
To see this, what we're seeing at least, this resurgence of polyamory has been really cool. We know it's been there, but people are starting to feel more. Yeah, people are starting to feel more comfortable discussing it. And so I think that's where a lot of this has come from, is a lot of the people online are now going, well, wait a minute. I've always been told that
that's an option.
Yeah.
I know. You don't even know. You don't even realize that our monogamous mindset and upbringing has completely influenced us. I learned that it's like part of colonization and Christianity, that's the monogamy thing. And it was assimilating indigenous people and taking away the kind of love that they had. Like now it's all about decolonizing love. Yes. Yeah. What did we used to do? And, you know, as our financial climate changes, I believe people will begin relating in different ways. And like these younger generations, they're just like, fuck you, marriage. But I also like, I'm not shaming monogamy because I've done monogamy most of my life, but my orientation's always been polyamorous, but I never knew the name for it. And I always felt shamed and different and just something was wrong. But now that I know the name, I'm like, fuck yeah, I'm so polyamorous. My lifestyle's monogamish, but I'm not here to shame monogamy. And I always like to say that because that's if people shame polyamory, I'm not going to shame back. Like I'm not.
Absolutely.
Right. We talk about it similarly in the kink scene, whenever it's like, we don't shame, you know, people that want and love being vanilla.
Yeah.
Like, I think it was, it was Leigh David Elliott that it was on that was like, vanilla is still a great flavor of ice cream.
Oh, I like chocolate better. Just kidding.
So she painted it really well for us there. So exactly. Hear what you're saying entirely. So it's really cool to see us getting these questions from people that are like, wait a minute. And then we sift through the different questions, because when we're going to get to this in a little bit about how people open up and all that, and what the most common types of long-term monogamous relationships look like when they start to open up. But we get all the pitfalls and all the caveats and things like that once we get there. But for now, let's start off this whole thing by asking the simple question of why do people go from monogamous, why do they start to open up in the first place? What are some things that you think influence that curiosity?
Yeah, I think that it's becoming more mainstream. So they're realizing it as an option. Some people feel like they've never been good at monogamy and they've had a lot of struggles with infidelity. And they're like, oh my God, there's another option. Like I find it hard to love one person. I've always loved many people and then I have to shame it and hide it. And then I fuck up. Some people just want more of everything, more intimacy, more love, more self-expansion and self-growth. Because when you're polyamorous, you are expanding your relational skills because it's not just about fucking. Oftentimes there's this emotional component and this romantic component and this connecting relational component. So you are like expanding your fucking relational skills so much. So you grow a lot in that way. It's so freeing. Like when I realized I was polyamorous, I was like, I felt so alive in my soul and turned on because I no longer had to shut down that part of myself.
Yeah.
You know, just because I'm like married and what society looks at as married, I was like, okay, I'm married. I'm only with this one person. But once I was like, wait a minute, I'm polyamorous. I was just like, my eyes opened, my nervous system opened up. Like, do you ever feel that way? That you start to feel like, oh wait, I don't even know how y'all identify. I don't know. Okay, wait, sorry.
No, you're great. How do you? We're monogamish.
It's it's on the ish side.
Yeah.
So okay. we tend to. I got it.
And I know you only say what you are comfortable saying.
No, right? No, we're completely. We've
shared everything on this show.
It's already on the internet.
Yeah, we're already all over the place.
Everyone already knows.
We tend to fluctuate. There's times depending. So it's going to sound hierarchical, but and we're okay with that, honestly.
Yeah.
It's depending on where our core relationship is, typically dictates on if we open up a little bit more or not.
Or if, you know, even if we have the time, sometimes it's a time management thing.
Oh, it like, absolutely.
You know, we both know. And like right now we are considering ourselves closed. And that's because we have a lot of things that we're juggling.
Yeah.
And when we don't have the time to, or when it starts to put a strain on us, that is when we make the decision to go ahead and close. But we've been open for the last like few years of our relationship.
Probably and five or so.
Yeah. And so it's definitely brought a lot of amazing opportunities to us. It allowed us to communicate more. It's allowed us to learn a lot about one another individually and who we are together.
So we do a lot of discussion around the boundaries around that. Clearly we don't ever want to hurt anybody outside of a relationship. So we make rules. It's like, if we're not engaging in a relationship currently, then we can talk. Then we talk about opening or closing. Mm-hmm. We try to steer away from being like, if we're already in a relationship on some level, then we try to respect that enough to be like, all right, now we don't talk about opening or closing, but once everything is just us, then we'll close it down.
Yeah, I think that's like a beautiful and ethical way. And I know that was one of y'all's questions, is like this new sensationalized conversation about it's unethical to be like have couples privilege. I think that was one of the questions we were going to go over. And I'm just like, if you are doing it with compassion and transparency and kindness, you are being polyamorous and you are ethical. How are you going to marginalize an already marginalized community and start putting all these rules? Like, if y'all are invested in each other and you've known each other longer and that's safe and secure and you want to open up and you meet someone and you say, hey, just so you know, this is our power dynamic. Mm-hmm. And they can ask questions. They can say, well, like, could I ever live with you? What if I wanted to have a baby with you? Like, how do you make decisions? If you're transparent with them, they might say, okay, cool, I want that. Or no, I don't want that.
Yeah.
And then that's ethical. Like, let's live your love, right?
There's low difference in that between, in the same sense as talking with somebody that you are looking to, say you're monogamous and you're looking in the dating scene, you're sitting down with someone saying, what do your life goals look like? What did you want to have kids? What are your
career looking like? It's
the same thing.
It's the same thing. We're just having a slightly larger dynamic here, which can be a difficult thing to navigate,
but it
can be so rewarding.
Yeah. And I've like, sometimes unicorns are exploited and I've been a unicorn and I loved it. It was one of my favorite loving experiences of my life, but not everyone has a good experience. So I get that too, but I didn't want to be like a full-time married person with them. I liked my role and I understood it and there was respect and love, but other people would be like, no way, I don't want to be your unicorn and like feel used for the night. Like have a transaction with a sex worker.
There.
That all the time.
That's our top piece of advice, because we have a number of monogamous friends who have been married and they're like, you know, we're thinking about bringing a third in.
Yeah.
And their first thing is like, to what purpose?
Yeah.
Yes. Like, and to what degree? They're people.
Yeah.
Yes.
Don't objectify them. Don't bring them in because it's fulfilling some fantasy that you and your wife have. That's not the purpose behind it. If you want to do that, sure. If you want to have an experience that's purely sexual and it's something to fulfill a fantasy within your relationship, hire a sex worker.
Yeah, exactly.
They're going to be professional.
Tell the person, I only want sex, and see if they're like, yeah, me too. Perfect.
Yeah. Good.
Are you here for a casual relationship? Are you here for just sex? Yes. If it's consensual amongst all parties involved, then go for it. And if you have to deal with emotions after the fact, do it in a way that can get you out on the other side in a good light, and not something where you're falling apart afterwards.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, the tragedy of falling apart afterwards. That's real.
Exactly.
I didn't mean to laugh there. No, you're okay. It was like a nervous laughter. I was like, oh my God, trauma.
We'll get along just fine. I do that quite a bit.
He does. Yeah.
Nervous. If, yes. Laughing, I'll be very serious. I laugh at some of the most serious things because it's just a reaction.
It's a release though. Your nervous system's trying to reset.
Exactly. So we talk a little bit about like reasons why couples open up, and this may be because they do realize their capacity for relationships does lie outside of a single partner. They may be so close and so trusting and so comfortable with their partner that they find themselves able to handle these other relationships.
Yeah, they have different needs that can be met by other people. Like maybe you're kinky and you really want to go to sex parties and your partner's like, oh, I'm not interested. Go get your needs met. Be safe. Do your thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm sure that can be a rough conversation to navigate.
I know. And, you know, relying on one person for everything is really difficult. Like we don't do that with friendships. We don't do that at work. Why are we doing it with romance, intimacy, and sex? It's a lot of pressure to be everything to one person.
Yeah. And that can lead to a lot of sexual problems. That can lead to a lot of relationship problems. And so the ability to engage in something like that in a safe and consensual manner is important.
Yeah. Consenting adults. Yeah. We're not promoting like infidelity. We're saying if you are, I think consent is everybody wants to, everybody knows about it, and everybody agrees.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So that's why it's exciting.
Yeah. It's that if it's not a fuck yes, then it's a no.
Yeah, right. It's not a hell yes, exactly. And by the way, like I can keep, I'll just keep talking. So bring me back to the question if you'd like, because I'm in space. I have no idea where I am.
Not a problem at all. Not a problem at all. So then let's shift a little bit. If we look at reasons why couples do open up, whether it to be any of the things we discussed, what are some reasons that you tell people, hey, it's not a good idea, or maybe it's not the best fit for you to open up?
Yeah, absolutely.
If they're starting to.
Yeah, I think if there's any element of abuse, so we call that domestic abuse or intimate partner violence. Mm-hmm. So if any of that is going on, I would say please don't open up right now, because opening up it's complex and it can exasperate current problems. Mm-hmm. And if you're already not safe, it's going to, it could make things worse. And I just want to say for the purposes of this, if anyone's listening and they feel that harm or anything, you can go to thehotline.org. That's a website for help if you feel safe to get that help. Or you can text 88788, just for anyone listening. So if you don't feel safe, I wouldn't open up. If you are feeling coerced, manipulated, like it's an ultimatum or pressure, that's not a hell yes. Okay. Like take a pause, because one person might be pushing it and the other person's like, I'm not sure. Those relationships end up being really complex and like not sustainable.
Yeah. A lot of times, you have that one partner that's like, I really want this.
Yeah.
They're like, I want to go for it. And the other partner leans into it simply because they're afraid that they're going to lose their partner if they don't say yes.
Mm-hmm.
Or that if they don't say yes, then it's going to lead to the other partner a case of infidelity or something along those lines.
Yeah. And that happens a lot. So just slow it down and try to go at a similar pace.
Yeah.
That's a deep question, though, because I see a lot of that. Other reasons to pause: if there's past like trauma wounds or like trust ruptures between you and your partner. Excuse me. And I'm assuming this is opening up from an already established relationship. Then maybe work a little bit on that trust and safety and security, because those are like the pillars. That's what Jessica Fern talks about. When those pillars are strong, you can navigate polyamory a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, what are other reasons to slow down? I mean, to pause. If you think polyamory is just like a 24/7 fuck fest orgy, which is awesome, but polyamory is the one consensual non-monogamy under the ethical non-monogamy umbrella that includes romance and intimacy and connection and a lot of fucking communication. Okay, I'm really bad at jokes, but I'm going to try to do a joke right now.
Go for it.
You can edit it out if it's not good. What did the monogamous person... Okay, so let me start over. See, I already fucked it up. My lover is like, please don't do any jokes on the podcast. I'm like, I'm not gonna. Okay, so...
And here we are.
We're 20 minutes in. Go.
Yeah. Okay, the monogamous person said to the polyamorous person, God, you're polyamorous. That's amazing. You must have sex all the time. And the polyamorous person said, no, I'm too busy communicating. So that's a very polyamorous joke. It's not that funny, but polyamorous people are talking all the time about their feelings and time management and what's happening. So if you think you're just going to be fucking all the time, can I say fuck on here?
Yeah. Yep. Fuck. Okay. Yeah, you can.
Okay. Fuck. That might be a misconception. And maybe just, yeah, it's maybe you want to do swinging. Maybe you want to do like an open relationship or something different. But yeah, I think that's all I can think of right now. Okay. Why people maybe slow it down.
Yeah, I think that a lot of people need a good look at the actual umbrella that falls a lot of this into, because they don't understand that there's a difference between polyamory and swinging and all of the, I mean, there's so many subgenres to having multiple partners. There's a lot
that's
to
so it. True. You bring up a great point. Not everyone understands the nuances of each defined thing.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so they sit back and they're in this long-term relationship and like, all right, well, we're going to go out. And you can have one partner thinking that this experience is going to be in one way. And I don't want to put like gender stereotypes onto anybody or anything like that. However, see is we see a male in the relationship who is very centered around the sexual gratification of multiple partners. And we see the wife in the relationship who is very centered around the emotional connection. And sex is kind of like the bonus for it. Like, I also get to fuck this person.
Yes. So, and then you know what I see?
What's that?
I'm like, I wanted to build anticipation. Then I see a flip where the cis male, like in this, like maybe cis male, cis female configuration, he doesn't get the amount of dates or the amount of sex he thought he would. And his partner begins to and is dating more often and maybe being more sexual. Or there's a threesome and he doesn't feel included the way he thought he would be. Or the female and the other person maybe start to have feelings.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we got to talk about expectations and boundaries and agreements before we jump into this, because so much changes. Oh, it's heartbreaking when we just, it's like going, what is it called when you jump from an airplane? Is that parachuting?
Skydiving.
No. Skydiving.
It's like skydiving and not even looking at the fucking safety protocol.
Yeah.
That's what getting into polyamory without talking first about in depth about it is, because people get really hurt. Or you can have a fucking great time because you're kind of like, okay, safety, communication, transparency.
Yeah. Let's talk about our boundaries. Let's talk about our expectations. Yeah. But that's such a big thing that we can discuss, is what your initial perception is of the types of relationships you're getting into.
Yeah.
So I love that you then in this hypothetical, we clarified that we are talking in this instance about a cis hetero male and possibly, like, let's go with our case, cisgendered heterosexual male and a cisgendered bisexual female.
What's up, girl? Hey, same. I'm pansexual. You're bisexual. We're friends.
Yes. See? Let's do this.
And so it's important for us that one of the things that we were doing or that we learned to over time was figuring out what our ideas are in the first place. What do you think this is going to be? What do you want out of this? To what extent can this go? And we fucked up a lot.
We
fucked up. I'll do. Yeah.
A lot. Yeah. And that's part of it. And that so is for part us, of it was, it. Yeah, for us, it was coming back to that like core of saying, all right, let's regroup. Here's what happened. Here's how things went south. What can we do in the future to make sure that doesn't happen? So I think that we did what a lot of couples do and just kind of did exactly that. We went skydiving without ever learning how to pull the cord. But
and I think it came after me recently at the time coming out as bisexual. I knew it was who I was, but I didn't grow up feeling like I had to talk about it. I wasn't ashamed of it. I just... I didn't care. I liked who I liked. I did what I did and I am who I am.
Love that.
And so to like have that need to come out, I never did. And then we kind of started having these conversations a bit more. And I was like, oh yeah, by the way, I'm totally bisexual. And it was really awesome. Cute. And he already knew, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Like,
it wasn't a surprise to him. But I do think that that's what initially like kickstarted it, was this is who I am. You accept me for who I am. But I would like the chance to explore what that means. And he was very open and understanding. But no, we definitely didn't go about it in the most like efficient way. We thought that we found someone that had gone through this process before. And so we thought that that was our parachute. They've done this. Yeah. Okay. They're our guide.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's let them take
That's
us.
A good way to learn too. That I think that was a smart thing to think. Yeah.
It can be.
It can be. And sure. Yes. And then you kind of hit the nail on the head. Emotions got kickstarted. Very deep emotions got kickstarted. And on both parties. And so it was something that we had to recognize and understand within ourselves to be able to step back and realize, okay, I like this aspect, but maybe not this aspect.
Mm.
No. And so it did take us like diving in a little bit more to even understand what our boundaries were. And so,
I think we got caught up in the experience of it.
For sure we did. It was our worst. We were like, hell yeah.
So exciting to open up and discover your, and I think that's why people rush in. And Carrie, I just want to say, like, I love your story of coming out. And I had a similar experience of not naming it, but think about it. Straight people don't name it. They just live it. You were just living your fucking life. When I think I came out once in my 30s, I was like, I'm bisexual. And everyone's like, yeah, we know. And I was like, okay. And then the next day I forgot because my life was so filled with trauma and survival that I wasn't able to have the privilege of being like, well, for me, it would have been a privilege to have the freedom in my mind to be like, yeah, I'm exploring this. I just was focused on surviving. And then now recently I was like, I think I'm like fluid. And my partner's like, I don't know. And I was like, well, on Google, it says I'm fluid. And so I was like, yeah, no, I think so.
Quiz,
yeah.
And this is what it told me.
I love how everyone already knows we're open and they're like, like Casey's telling you, I already knew that. And you're like, oh, but it's so fun. Some people love labels and some don't. It is so fun. I enjoy labels right now and I get rid of them and use them as I please.
Sure.
But oh man, I have so many. I have pansexual, panromantic, autosexual, sapiosexual, ecosexual, panromantic. I just love labels.
Yeah. Well, that's what we had discussed previously. We talked about how important the use of GSRD is.
Oh yes.
Whenever it comes to just having conversations with potential dating partners or anything like that, we talked about normalizing as opposed to being like, you know, I'm having a conversation, I'm figuring out if we click, but how casually we can be like, hey, if you don't mind sharing with me, and we'll recap for any listener that doesn't remember this, but our GSRD being our gender, our sexuality, and our relationship diversity.
Yeah, I love that.
To be able to casually bring that in to be like, hey, if you don't mind me asking, like, what is your GSRD? And then be able to be like, oh, in actuality, here, let me lay it all out on the table for you.
I love that.
So we can figure out if we click together and this is something that'll work out well, or if you're like, oh, you know, I'm partial to this or not that. And it's just a really good way to not make any assumptions about anybody or to learn more about them.
Saying, are there any identities you'd like to share? So they don't have to out themselves if they're not ready. But gosh, I love my identities right now. They're so fun. But some people don't feel safe to share their identities. And I want to honor that too.
Right.
Wherever they are in their journey.
Yeah, for sure.
I know we got off topic of polyamory.
Ew. This is fine. This is fun.
No, this is what our show is about. We're so informal. We're trying to make it super relaxed and be able to talk about whatever we want to talk about. We have that like core topic, and if it just shifts around,
and then it just like rains. I love that. Yeah,
exactly. So then let's talk about people. Let's go back to beginners, people that are just opening up their long-term relationship. What are some good, let's call them reflection questions, stuff that they might be able to ask themselves and their partners to figure out how they're going to begin to navigate this wild ride that is polyamory.
Wild, wild, terrifying, beautiful, sexy. Yeah. Okay. So why do you want to open up? Why do you want to open up with the person that you're trying to open up with? How do y'all think it will change you and evolve you? How will you grieve the loss of monogamy? Because monogamy has so much implicit, innate security and safety in it. So how are you going to grieve? Because when you start to shift, there is a loss. And it can be unsettling to your brain and your nervous system. How are you going to help each other soothe and regulate if big emotions come up? Because I think a lot of people are intellectualizing polyamory these days and they're trying to be the good polyamorous person and not have jealousy. You're going to have jealousy. Let's plan for it. Mm-hmm. How are we going to manage new relationship energy? Because you can get self-obsessed. So you want to be able to manage it if the other person's not going through it. How do you want to set up rituals that help us stay connected and what parts of our relationship are we going to be able to allow to be changed and open? Because I think people are like, oh, it's not going to change anything. We'll still have this. And it's like, bitch, you are fucking with your whole fucking dynamic in a good way, but also let some room in for things to morph. Are you going to be able to take, do you know how to take breaks? What if it's too intense and you don't want to do it? Can you say no? What are your agreements? What are your boundaries? Can we do weekly check-ins? What was the question again?
Oh, no, you just keep on going. No, like, you're done. This is great. We're talking about
what kind of
reflection questions for beginners, for these people to be like, hey, here's some things I should ask myself, as well as I should ask my partner, and clarifications that could be made. Because you've already given us a fucking
treasure trove. I have so many. How do you foresee yourself operating in polyamory? Mm-hmm. What are you going to do if your partner's dating and you're not? Yeah. So just staying connected, staying compassionate. Are you going to have time to yourself? Because all of a sudden, if you got multiple lovers, you might feel really overwhelmed. So you've got to have good boundaries. You've got to say yes to yourself. So yeah, gosh, there's so many. I could just keep going.
You've done well so far. You've done very well so far.
In the past, we've talked a lot about check-ins, and I do think that check-ins are super important, especially when you're first starting out. And our check-ins would have been something as simple as like, oh, I chatted with this person today, or I chatted with this person. But I do feel like whatever works for y'all as a couple works for you. You know what I mean? Like, figure out. Exactly. Right. There really isn't. If y'all sit down and y'all both decide you want to be open, I think the biggest advice that we like to give is just start slow. You know, start it in slow. Go on a date together. Go on these dating apps together. Sit down and have a night where y'all scroll through and be like, ooh, I like her. I like him. Yep. Yep. Nope. Yep. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that really brings up, I believe, like the fun aspect of it, which can really get it kind of like moving and evolving into something more.
It brings in that we can, like you're talking about, if you're going to do check-ins, deciding on how often you're going to check in. Yes. Is this like, hey, let's check in once a week and you tell me about the conversations you had and I tell you about the ones that I had? Is it going to be daily? Is it going to be like as soon as you open up a conversation with somebody? Because to us early on in the beginning of a lot of this is, It can be hectic. It can be scary, and you can have a lot of worry for your partner, and you can have a lot of feelings of envy pop up. Be like, who are they talking to? Well, how much are they talking? Or how far is their conversation going? What are
like starting to compare yourself and feeling like you have to compete and you might lose something, and all of a sudden, like you've been in this established relationship that was pretty safe and secure, and now you're opening back up to that dating mindset, which brings up like those nervous feelings of how you're being perceived and how far is this going to go? And oh my God, now you have a relationship with someone else. And it's so, I mean, I just think,
And I mean, I love that you had said this earlier. You talked about whenever a person, one of the people in this relationship starts dating more than the other person, maybe one of the partners is not getting, you know, the connections that they were looking
for, and
they're just kind of down here while the other person is scheduling out multiple dates a week and they have juggling all these conversations and all these people. And now you look at that and go, okay, well, what am I supposed to do now? Because you're starting to feel like, well, maybe this wasn't a good idea. Maybe we should just shut the whole thing down. And that's not the way to go about doing it.
Yeah. That's when you want to lean in. That's where you take out the intellectualization of polyamory and you lean into the feelings and you talk about, hey, I'm feeling like a little lonely, or I'm having FOMO and can we reconnect? Or you go within yourself like, okay, what are my strengths? How do I want to connect? Can I connect with my community? Because polyamory can be isolating. We have to have a community and resources. Like, educate yourself, read and do blogs, but like Good Sexual Health Alliance has a community. Bloom does. These are all in Los Angeles. 910 WeHo, and then Sex Positive Los Angeles. Like, meet other people and have your little tribe of like-minded people. But I wanted to touch too on something that Carrie said about the script of consensual non-monogamy and not having one. That's like such a blessing and a curse, because we don't really know how to navigate it because there is no script, but we have the freedom of creating a script. But if you have an established lover, like someone that you've been with and maybe it's a primary, you two get to write the script. Or if you're doing it solo or whatever, however you're doing polyamory, write what you want it to look like and what you expect and what you wish and how you want to show up as a polyamorous person. And then you might have to check some of your thoughts to align with how you want to behave. And that's the part where we go slow and we practice and we have immense compassion for ourselves. You are going to fuck up. I love that you two were like, we fucked up. That's absolutely going to happen. How are you going to repair? Because accidents will be made.
Yeah. And if your relationship's not strong enough, this goes back to that whole thing of why to open up and why not to open up.
Yeah.
Because if your relationship's not strong enough and you go into this and you do fuck up and then you find yourself unable to repair that relationship. Oh. Yeah. And then you break up and now you spout the message to the world, polyamory ruined my relationship.
Oh,
in reality, you were already on a crash course to begin with.
Yeah.
Right.
And you're now blaming something, which people tend to do. They're blaming something outside the relationship for fucking everything up.
Yeah. And let's just name, there are so many happy polyamorous relationships. So many, just like monogamy. And then there are many that are struggling just like monogamy.
Just like monogamy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Guess what the common denominator is? People.
Yeah.
Relationships are hard. No one teaches us how to do them, but we are taught monogamy through the mainstream and the media and our parents usually. But gosh, it's going to be so exciting in the future when people are like, oh yeah, my parents are polyamorous. And now they are, like, that's going to be fun.
I know. We always have this behind the scenes conversation because, I mean, we're both cinephiles. So we watch a lot of movies. We do all this. And we consistently see in like pop culture with relationships blooming and dying and all this. And you have everybody putting it through the monogamous lens. And so in our heads, we're like, I guarantee you, if we're able to take a peek behind the curtain at like celebrities' lives, I would bet there's an insanely high percentage of them that are just polyamorous and don't talk
hell about it. Yeah, and don't call it that.
Yeah,
it depends on the generation too. I've noticed like older generations, they're like, oh, I don't use that term. They just live it. And then younger generations are more like claiming these labels. Either all those options are valid. I was thinking about that movie Bandits. Have you ever seen that?
No.
Oh my gosh. Okay, I'm really bad with
that. I know.
But this is an older movie, but it's Bruce Willis, Billy Bob Thornton, and I forgot her name. I'm not going to say anything else because I don't want to spoiler alert it. But when I saw that and I didn't have the name for polyamory, I remember watching it and I was like, oh, I just felt like my body was like, yes. And I didn't know what it meant. But you'll see, I'm not going to spoil it. Everyone go watch Bandits. It's so good. What's her name? Yeah, Kate. Okay, anyway.
Put it on a list.
Yeah, because we plan on having, so we'll definitely watch it before the next time that we chat.
After you watch it, text me.
Deal.
Or take a picture of yourselves watching.
We'll just be texting you during it. Okay, be like, bitch, you watch it.
Oh, I would love that. Please do it.
So then do you feel like whenever it comes to having multiple partners, that there should be some ultimate goal or attainable thing that you're trying to reach? Or do you feel like it's just about free love and experiencing life as you see fit?
Gosh, that's a really good question. I think some people really want to relationship escalate naturally. Mm-hmm. Like some people are naturally monogamous. Some people naturally are like, oh, I really want to have babies and live with all these people. So that could be your goal because you feel that in your soul that like you foresee yourself having 5 kids and living with 17 people. And then other people might be like, I just want to have freedom my whole life and kind of hop around. But as long as there's compassion and transparent compassion for self and others and that consent piece, I think you're good. I don't think there needs to be a goal. And that's why I love polyamory. The goal with monogamy is get married, have kids. The goal with polyamory is love, relate, be intimate, be kind. And if something's ending, talk about it and take care of each other. That's how I see polyamory.
Well, no, I love the fact that you talk about the ability to not have to adhere to some sort of track.
Yeah.
That you're able to just kind of like, I like ride the wave. You can decide as things come up. It doesn't have to be you go from point A to B to C to D. And then you check the boxes off the list because you've been told your entire life that that's what's supposed to make you happy and successful.
I mean, right? It's like, it's familiar to capitalism and like Western colonized culture, right? To be like, now we do this, now we do this. What about just relating and connecting and just being present? Like, what about being present in polyamory? It's the way you practice it, I think, because it's a moving, evolving type of love where you are really, it's so relational, right?
Because absolutely. Well, there's just such a deep concept. It's an amazing thing to discuss because it goes so much deeper. What are you talking about? Whatever you bring up into it, like Western culture and capitalism and things like that. This can generate a lot of fear and anxiety in people because we are told, we are delivered a message from the time we're born till the time that we die of this is what your life is supposed to look like. Mm-hmm. Let's put it up on the screen in big letters that this doing these things means you're happy. Doing these things means that you're successful. And yeah. If you stray away from that, you're something's not a good. Yeah. There's something wrong with you. And the way that you would see it, like in a sci-fi movie, would be like, you are not a good citizen.
Well, I mean, think about even when we grow up and it's like, okay, well, what do you want to be when you grow up? Oh, okay. So you want to be a nurse. Okay. So you're a nurse and that's it. You don't get to be anything else.
Yeah. One thing.
You picked it and that's all you got. And you better not say doing that.
Right. Like you better say like doctor or something like safety. Oh, okay.
Yeah. And I do think that this like younger generation has really taught us that like, and like this whole like entrepreneur concept, right? Mm-hmm. But like that was really eye-opening. And I think that's why so many of millennials got like shit on, because we're like, no, we are not going to do just that one thing. We're going to be able to do multiple things because we have multiple abilities within us as a human that is not going to be defined around one occupation,
which
right?
Which is the same reason why older generations look at us and go, you are fucking things up. Because we're making them uncomfortable.
I love making them uncomfortable. Oh, that's my favorite demographic to make uncomfortable.
That is my kink. I'm like, hi, I'm BIPOC, polyamorous, and queer. Hi.
Hi.
And then I watch people get.
What do you have to say about it?
Yeah, say something to my face.
I'm covered in tattoos. Boom.
Yes, and I love your tattoos. World. I love your tattoos on your legs.
Thank you.
Yes,
girl, I got so many. I don't even know how many I have at this point.
You want to pull your leg up?
I have some, but it's too hard to see.
You can come count them for me. I have no idea how many I have, but
I love that. They're so beautiful.
But I'm just saying, like the concept of, if you look at the fact that your occupation is not the occupation you're going to have the rest of your life, maybe do the exact same thing to your relationship. You can do other things than what was like pre like shoved into our brains that like, no, this is what we have to do. And this is our only option. And I do give so much applaud to this younger generation that have come out and said, this is who I am. This is what I'm going to do. Mm-hmm. Fuck your mold, fuck your system.
Yes.
And now I feel like us as like millennials and older millennials, we're really like, that's a great idea.
Yeah.
How else can we utilize these concepts of not being stuck in this mold? And I think that if you look at your life as like a career, you can look at your relationship the same way. You don't have to be stuck in one concept. Just because you're raised thinking one way doesn't mean that you can't evolve and understand other joys in life than just what we were brought up to think.
Yeah, I love what you're saying. And this just connects to, as soon as you start to like question sexuality and how you have sex and why and your pleasure and you start to own it, I think it fucks everything up in the paradigm that you exist in. And all of a sudden you're like, oh my God, I own my pleasure. I own my body. Yep. Wait a minute. What am I doing all the things that someone else told me? What do I value about what I've been taught? And how do I really see myself? Because we're fucking like multidimensional beings.
Yeah.
Why would we ever do one thing? I do so many things. I even approach therapy as an art that's like colorful and queer and like spicy. Mm-hmm. I don't know how to just do one thing. I've never fit into a box and I never want to. And I do make people uncomfortable and it's my kink.
Oh yeah.
That's not my problem, but I think I'm also inspiring them on some level. And
you are definitely inspiring them.
Right. We're tickling something in people that wakes them up and reminds them they are so expansive. They can love any way they wish. Mm-hmm. But it's scary too, because then you have to go back on the way your mind is like, you know, conditioned to not be shamed.
And rewiring that is a complex process. It's one of the reasons why we're online and we see a lot of coaches, sexuality and sex coaches that are out there and that are spouting advice. And a lot, so there's some good stuff. There's also a lot of scary stuff.
Yeah.
They're trying to tell you one way you're supposed to be in it. And it's just this whole mix. And so for us looking at it, it's really, really, that's the time whenever we're like, look, if you're trying to really deconstruct the very core values that you grew up with, of things like monogamy, that's whenever it's important to team up with like a really good therapist
Yes.
that can help you do it. because navigating that on your own can be potentially hazardous, especially when you live in the era of information, whenever we have access to all of it. It's you're literally giving a child explosives and saying, play with these.
Yeah. Because that exciting part of polyamory is like, yeah, let's do it. Let's open up. And then we forget our nervous system is conditioned to think one way is the good way, the safe way, the secure way. Mm-hmm. Two books I love. Oh, I don't have them on my shelf right now, but Jessica Fern's new Poly Wise is so good. I'm writing a book.
Yes.
I'll let you know when it's out. I'm still writing it.
Absolutely. You got to let us know.
Yeah. Because we'll have to have you back on to talk about it.
Oh my gosh, please. Thank you. And then Martha Kelpie wrote a book too. Her book is for clinicians, like therapists, but it's also for polyamorous people. But I would say it is a little more clinically written, but that's the shit you're going to learn when you're in therapy. Yeah. So I think like go to the root of how do I change my thinking and my perception of myself? How do I increase my self-esteem? I see y'all laughing. What's going on?
that's because that's what I do. I'll get recommendations from people that are like, hey, read this book on like we had somebody more recently. We were talking about internal family systems. And so we had talked. A little bit, and so they'd been like, hey, read this book on parts work.
Yes.
And so I went through parts work. I went through that one in like an afternoon, and then completely like shifted gears and said, you know what, I'm gonna go ahead. And I picked up Internal Family Systems by Richard Schwartz,
who
created
Bad Parts. Okay, got it.
And so I dove into that, and that one for me, like from the clinician side of things, just spoke so much more depth. How and why behind it, and I would just felt so much more connected to doing things like that. And I tend to do that with all of the stuff that we read.
You were like the most permanent student I've ever known in my entire life, and I admire the shit out of you about that. And I'm over here like listening to smut books, and he's over here doing like.
But you compliment each other. This is the beautiful.
It's so funny.
Y'all can compliment each other in this way. It's beautiful.
Oh, for sure. Because what we ultimately want is the other to feel joy, right?
Yeah.
So that's
part of it, which brings me to that next topic that we have. And that's the biggest topic of compersion. For people that don't understand what compersion is, it's literally the joy that you get from watching your partner experience joy within. And we use it within polyamory as a way to be like, I'm receiving joy by watching my partner like happy. Whatever they engage with other people, whatever way that may be. Yeah. But you actually experiencing joy from your partner's joy.
Yes.
And it's such an important and large thing to try to do, but it can be difficult too. So what tips do you have for people trying to introduce themselves to compersion and how they can access these feelings?
You know, it's the first thing I'm going to do is like say, oh, fuck, I don't know if we can access compersion. We can just set up the context to hope that it happens, kind of like orgasm. Yeah. You can't force an orgasm. It's like a sneeze. It's like a response, but you can set up the context around it to increase the likelihood it will happen. Exactly. So I want to say like compersion is that fulfillment, like you feel fulfilled seeing your lover be fulfilled. It's like, you're being loved. I love that. So not everyone's going to experience that. And that doesn't mean you're doing polyamory right or wrong at all. You may never experience, you may experience it all the time, but to set up the context to make it more likely to happen. I think Dr. Eli Sheff talks about this actually is having safety, security, and power and equality, shared power and equality, safety and security. If those are increased in your relationship and strong, I think it's more likely you will experience compersion if you haven't yet. So let that motivate you. Yeah. But if you never experienced, that's okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I love that link. I love that link that you talked about with it being contextually appropriate. I mean, we talk about that often whenever it comes to sex. And, you know, we have people like Emily Nagoski out there who like centers.
I'm just going to keep doing commercials for you.
We're going to be screenshotting all of these.
I have so many good ones.
Come As You Are was a great book. Her newest one, Come Together, was a fantastic read.
I didn't see that one.
It was just released in January.
Oh, okay. I'm going to have to get that. And then this one's great for setting boundaries because you're going to need a lot of ability to set boundaries when you
Which one is that?
And what's that one?
This is Set Boundaries, Find Peace by Nedra Glover Tawab. And she's a BIPOC femme, so I'm always uplifting my community. But that's a great one because Whew. I mean, a lot of people that struggle with polyamory because it's really hard. Like if they have like people pleasing tendencies and yeah. mm-hmm. have trouble setting boundaries, you can kind of feel run over in polyamory. But anyways, I'm sorry. See how I just completely got off track? Where were we?
By all means, you could continue books. With any of that.
We're talking about orgasms.
We're talking about compersion and the context and creating the context instead of trying to go for it directly and just navigate your way to it.
But I like that you said that not everyone's going to ever experience that because I feel like you get like these like expectations that like, no, there'll come a point that I'm so satisfied by seeing him satisfied. But I do love that you say that like, because that is an unrealistic expectation. That just means that it doesn't mean that what is happening is wrong. It means you may not experience that within the poly world.
Yes. And I need to do a video. I do little videos on the polyamory therapist on like Instagram mm-hmm. stuff and TikTok. I need to do one on this because I think that's part of the intellectualization of polyamory and the good polyamory theory that I have, the good polyamorous theory I have, where mm-hmm. we're trying to do it as if it's on an app and there's buttons and we should be acting certain ways. Hello, emotions. We cannot control them. We can navigate them and cope with them and understand them and lean into them. But polyamory is full of big emotions. Yes. So compersion may or may not happen. Jealousy may or may not happen. If it does, how can we increase it? How can we navigate it? It's like, that's my therapist brain, but that mm-hmm. actually does help. Like I do it to myself all the time. I therapize my own brain. I'm not supposed to.
It's kind of hard not to though. When you have the information, you kind of turn it on yourself. Wait,
I have a brain. I'm going to therapize it.
When you watch it help so many people so often, then you kind of go, well, I'll just use it on myself.
Oh my God. Yes.
Let's dive in.
Oh, I'm fucking with cognitive behavioral therapy right now. I am just like, oh, what thought did I just think that made me feel like fucking shit? Okay. Oh my God, that was that thought. Well, I don't have to make it like, oh my God, you're amazing and beautiful. No, I just need a neutral thought. I'm a good person. I'm doing my best. I can't control what they think of me. And I'll be like, oh my God, all of a sudden I'll feel my nervous system take leave the threat and be like, oh, I'm okay. And I'm like, shit, this shit works.
Yeah.
And I just practice. Okay, go ahead.
No, that's awesome. We love talking about that. Again, as we set up the context for it, that also allows you, as you said, navigate the emotions. Stop worrying about if the emotions are going to happen and start focusing more on how can I, when they are occurring, can I A, recognize that I'm having the emotion in the first place? Can I B, then take that emotion and figure out how I can get to maybe the next closest emotion to it brings me back towards happiness, right?
Oh my God.
So if I'm in a place of anger, I can think about what emotions lie closest to anger for me. And then try to move myself in, instead of trying to go from angry to happy or from angry to this way the fuck over here.
No, just go one step.
Yeah. Take a small step just to the next emotion. Yes. And even if that emotion is not a positive one, just take a step to the next one and then find out what's next to that until you can navigate your way back out of that dark hole that you're in and into something brighter.
Oh, that dark hole. And it makes me think about, and I just want to say this because I know we're going to end soon. Mm-hmm. Our bodies perceive a lot of things as threat. And when that happens, we go into fight, flight, fawn or freeze. And then our rational brain has shut down.
Yes.
Polyamory can be a threat because our nervous system is like, oh my God, you're about to lose your beloved. What the fuck are you doing? They're out with someone else. You need to compete. All this shit comes up and we have to find a way to regulate ourselves, self-soothe, ask for support and check in. Is there evidence that I'm in threat right now? Yeah. And help your brain come back. And I think sometimes at the beginning, like that primal panic Jessica Fern talks about in PolySecure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the nervous system and the attachment shit is real. And that's why therapy, like a therapist who is poly-friendly or polyamorous or a poly-advocate is really good because we can help people kind of build some new skills around polyamory.
Yeah. Well, you don't always have the ability to recognize what's going on. I mean, and that comes from the fact that whenever you enter into these states, we have decreased blood flow and decreased activity in the prefrontal cortex, right? So now that logical brain is just fucking out the window. And so now you're in the reptilian brain. Your amygdala is firing up,
lizard
right?
Lizard brain.
And you have all these other pieces that are just firing negativity into your head. And you don't necessarily recognize, because logic's out the window, that you're in that state. And so you react emotionally.
Exactly.
If we can start to recognize, if we can start to have a plan in place to recognize it,
Thank you. Yeah. And compassion for ourselves. We're just human. Mm-hmm. We're human beings. We're really fragile. And we just want to be loved, seen, and heard, really.
Exactly.
At the end of the day. That's a good place to.
I think that we're gonna bring the interview to a conclusion. This is part one, by the way, for those that didn't already know it, that we're sitting down here with Fox Eros as we talk about polyamory. We've covered a number of things today, and we're gonna cumber
and make it up words.
We're gonna come as you are.
There it is. Thank you, Emily Nagoski, for that one. But on our next time, in our interview part two, we're going to be covering a little bit more about things like the issues within genders and issues within some of these very, very real emotions that pop up with polyamory. So stay tuned next time for another episode of Come With KC. We're your hosts. I'm Dr. Casey Sanders.
And I'm Carrie Sanders.
We'll see you next time.
See you next time. I'm Fox Eros. Bye. Find me on the polyamorytherapist.com.